This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by support at patreon.com/frogpants. Shows like Current Geek are expensive to make, and it helps us a lot when you contribute to our bottom line in very small ways. Say $1 a month. That's like one app on the Google Play Store or the Apple iOS Store. Just save that $1 a month and put it toward this at patreon.com/frogpants. Help us out today.
I have
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world and you, to keep you current on things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Well, hello, Scott Johnson.
How's it going?
It must be Friday.
I love Fridays. Fridays are great. I know we say this a lot, but You represent the tail end of my broadcast week. Not really. I have other things to do on Saturday, but for the most part, like the big stuff, this is where we bookend it and celebrate it in a way.
If I am the tail end of your broadcast week, then you're the jawbone of... Never mind.
All right. Perfect.
There's an ass pun in there somewhere.
There is an ass pun. Everyone loves a good ass pun. Speaking of ass puns, joining us tonight, two fantastic guests, one returning, one brand new, but both kind of born of the same pod, in my opinion. They're pod people, is what I'm saying. Let's welcome to the show returning guest, Mr. Garrett Weinzierl, host of The Angry Chicken, co-host of Into the Nexus, and the creator and curator of amove.tv. Garrett, welcome to the show.
Huzzah, that was quite the intro. Thank you, Scott.
It's good to have you back, man. It's been a number of months, I suppose, since you last
graced us. Yeah, last time I destroyed Mr. Brian Ibbett in the
oh, that's right,
in the trivia, which I think that, does that mean I get to join Frogpants All-Stars of the next Nerdtacular? Because I hope that's what it
you
means.
Really should, because once you beat Brian, what else is there left to do but take your place in the hallowed seat?
If you know, one of the coolest things about Garrett Weinzierl,
yeah,
is that he sounds the same at real life speed as he does at 2x.
Yeah, he does. It's the same.
And how is that? I'm not sure what Time Lord technology you're
into. I hear Dills speak in real life, and I'm like, what's wrong with Dills? But I listen to The Angry Chicken at 2X, and Garrett, you just sound the same.
That's a little, awesome. It's a little bit weird.
It's a superpower.
Yeah. Not as weird as Tom listening to podcasts at high speed, but that's a different problem for a different
day. I got to finish the instance. Hold on.
It'll only take a minute because it's at 3x speed. And really slow ones. Anyway, oh my gosh, that is insane to me. Also with us, joining us, Garrett's co-host on the show I just mentioned, Into the Nexus, and also the StarCast, which occasionally does things, which I'm really glad it stuck around and does the occasional wrap-up, because that was super awesome after BlizzCon this year. It's Kyle Ferguson. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you both. It's fun because we're almost like two teams here. We got the Tom and Scott team who do things here and there together, and then you two who are always doing things together, and you know, together it's a foursome of, I don't know, what kind of magnitude? I don't know how to describe it.
Fearsome foursome.
Yeah, is that it? All right, fair enough.
Someone out there with some weird fan fiction wishes you left it at just foursome.
Yeah, they do. I think his name...
The guile and the relationship name just doesn't work.
No. There's a guy named Mike Boyd out there. He's probably made his own
guile,
fan fiction.
Though. Is kind
Daryl,
of cool.
Maybe?
And Tom Skerritt is something, someone different, so.
Yeah, Scom. Right?
He was Scum.
Always so angry.
That's like
Top
something
Gun.
You need to dredge.
Or could just be Tot.
I don't like that one. I don't like that one at all. All right. Hey, moving on. Let's get to the point of the damn show, which is some stuff up top.
Herbert Hoover, top. Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tomb, what do we have up top?
Well, Scoot, Dean Basinge submitted our first one. And let me tell you, folks, if you're like, why haven't they talked about this story on Current Geek? It's your own fault. Whoa. Go to currentgeek.reddit.com and at the very least, click upvote on a few stories you'd like to hear us talk about, because that's what we pay attention to. Dean Basinge submitted this one. Two Pittsburgh, California residents. Breaking news. There's a Pittsburgh in California. Whoa. Are bringing a class action lawsuit against Comcast for turning their home routers into partially public Wi-Fi hotspots. This is a new Comcast program. They section off a part of the Wi-Fi hotspots, and they're trying to create a network out of them. The suit takes issue with the fact that the shared device is turned on without explicit permission. It's an opt-out, not an opt-in. And they say it could add 30 to 40% to a homeowner's utility bills under heavy use. The plaintiffs also claim decreased inadequate speeds on their home Wi-Fi network, although Comcast says, we use a separate antenna for the public service. We privilege the customer's speed over the guest speed. They shouldn't see any speed hit at all.
So just so I understand it entirely, the complaint boils down to their feeling that their internet that they're paying for, that they should be getting full service out of, is being siphoned off and put into these public pools that are essentially hi-fi.
And that they weren't asked. They'd be like, it's one thing if they said, can we do this? And we said yes or no, but they just turned it on by default.
So this is kind of akin to, let's say the way I would look at it is like a public utility, like say water. If you're getting water and your shower is suddenly having not as much pressure as you're used to, yet you're still paying for the same amount of water, and you come to find out, well, it's because they're siphoning it off into some sort of public pool or public showers. It's the same kind of thing. I'd be mad too. It feels like they could maybe have a case. Do they have a case?
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. The idea that it's slowing down their home use, I'm a little skeptical about. Comcast actually has a pretty good system set up. I'm not saying it couldn't have failed. It could definitely have failed. But they have a pretty good system set up so that it shouldn't impact. And they should be so lucky. I've been to Pittsburgh, California, that there are so many people using Wi-Fi around their house that they actually have a problem with it. And that 30 to 40% power usage thing is also like you have to have people on your public Wi-Fi hotspot all the time. Although, theoretically, that could be an issue. You can opt out of it. Comcast doesn't make it easy to turn it off or easy to find out where to turn it off. So I think the biggest issue here isn't necessarily the actual effects. It's more of the, hey, Comcast, not cool to just turn this on. You need to come and ask us if it's okay.
Got to be transparent. So down in America's wiener, Garrett, where you live, Florida, how would this land on you if you were a kid? Well, I don't know. Who do you have as a provider down there?
I am fortunate enough to actually have two choices where I live. So I opted for Verizon instead of Comcast because I had Comcast through college and they made me want to murder people.
Mm. Yeah, we can't have that. Murder's bad.
That being said, with all this stuff, Verizon.
The murders continue.
Yeah. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you so much. I don't know. I have a question about this, and maybe Tom, you would know the answer, and maybe you don't. What happens if someone gets on this public Wi-Fi that's attached to your router and starts, you know, pirating every episode of Game of Thrones and maybe some even more illegal activity?
Oh, good point.
Is it my home that someone's going to kick the door in on?
No, I think Comcast has actually said, and this I would have to check, but I think Comcast has actually said, anybody who's using the Xfinity Wi-Fi is what they call it, the public Wi-Fi, is not your responsibility. That's
okay.
And that's one of the reasons it's a separate antenna, it's a separate SSID. It's like a Comcast is on the hook for anything that happens on there.
Okay, because that's the first place my brain went, because we've all heard horror stories of somebody was stealing someone's Wi-Fi and downloaded something terrible. They got the local authorities involved.
And sure. Yeah. I mean, if somebody's downloading child porn and then you're implicated, that's a terrible idea. But also I don't know if there are any, and this might be me getting extreme again, but I don't know if there are any sort of security issues with this. So if somebody is siphoning off of your stuff.
And again, separate antenna.
Yeah.
Firewalled off.
Yeah.
That, not to say that a clever attacker couldn't try to figure out how to get through there. But that's actually no different than using the internet, right? I mean, this is because it's happening in the same machine. We like to think like, oh, he's right next door, so his packets can tunnel over. But it's really not any more of a security risk than connecting to the internet. Maybe a slight bit more because you're already in the modem. That could make a few things easier, but it's not a proximity thing. And Comcast, like I said, most people say they've done a fair job of walling this off. Certainly, I'm not going to disagree with someone who says, yeah, but you know what's 100% secure? Not having that on.
Yeah, I would agree. Kyle, any thoughts on this thing before we move on?
It's just so villainous. Like, it reminds me of that horrible Batman movie, Edward Nigma, selling the TV boxes to everyone, and then he flips the switch and it all streams their brain energy across the universe. Or like a Pinky in the Brain scheme.
Yeah.
No, Kyle, it's for your own benefit, so you can get Wi-Fi wherever you are across the free land of the United States.
Yeah. I mean, we can all probably...
It's all for your good.
We can probably agree. Us. If they would just come out and say, this is what we're planning on doing.
Well, but the thing is, they did, right? Kinda. It's one of those... like terms of use kind of things. Like they have said, there was a story about this on Ars Technica several months ago, and Comcast made it public. Like, we're going to do this, but they didn't opt you. They didn't give you a chance to opt in. They gave you a chance to opt out.
Mm.
Right. And so how many people out there that get Comcast just didn't notice or threw away the flyer or didn't read the email or whatever. Right. They just, it's always better policy to ask people to opt into something than opt out. If Comcast comes and says, hey guys, we're going to try to do this public Wi-Fi thing. It's totally secure. Here's where you can read about that. And it'll help your community. You're going to have a bunch of people do this willingly.
Yeah.
But obviously you're going to have more do it if you just turn it on automatically, and then you have to deal with the bad press.
The whole opt-out thing is tempting, though, isn't it? Because I used to work for a company where everything we did with this web project we were working on, their minds automatically said, well, wait, we want to make sure we get everybody. So we'd rather have an opt-out as whatever the analog was to what we were doing. And it's very tempting, you know, because that's your biggest reach. That's your most people. And most people won't opt in. But most people also won't opt out because they're not paying attention and don't even notice. So it's dastardly.
I had this argument with a guy named Glenn Farrell at techtv.com, and he was very, very polite, but very insistent. Like, but if we don't opt them in, they won't opt in. And I was very insistent. Like, yeah, that's a great way to piss off your audience. We should not make it opt out. We should make it opt in. We ended up compromising and using a radio button that wasn't pre-selected. So it was a newsletter subscription, right? And it was like, would you like to subscribe to the newsletter? You had to answer the question.
Oh, I see.
You couldn't submit the form.
Got it. Yeah.
So it didn't opt you in. It didn't opt you out. It just forced you to answer the question. So, and we ended up getting a much higher response rate opting in than we would have if we had just left it unchecked.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because at least you've given somebody some neutral ground and they get to make an informed decision, a decision they have to make. That I can deal with. But this other stuff, it's a little fishy.
But did you change their homepage to MSN, perhaps?
There's the important question.
Ooh, yeah. That
brings up. If you want to disable this, if you're a Comcast customer and you don't know how yet, go to customer.comcast.com, click the Users and Preferences tab, click Manage Xfinity Wi-Fi, and then select Disable Xfinity Wi-Fi and click Save.
What if I want to opt out of the gasoline wars in the deserts of Australia? Is there a way to do that?
No. If you're in the gasoline wars of the deserts of Australia, you're in the original Mad Max.
Whoa.
You want to go see the trailer for Mad Max Fury Road, as submitted by CCastro425. Hit the web this week. The film is directed by George Miller, the original director and mastermind behind the whole genre. I watched it. What did you guys think?
Okay. So I just got to say this one thing. I mentioned this on TMS. I want to mention it again. The first reaction that seemed to hit Twitter and wherever else I found reactions to the trailer, it was about 50-50 down the line. This isn't scientific, but that's about what I saw. Half the people I know were excited about how much it looked like they were going to be using a lot of practical effects. And about half of the people were mad because they are seeing too much CGI in what they consider to be a series that needs to be all practical effects. It needs to be all pyrotechnics and all actual actors and stuntmen and cars and no funky business with CGI. My reaction was, holy cow, this is George Miller, who brought us the original Mad Max trilogy with Road Warrior probably being the high point. And now we all know who runs Bartertown because of Tina Turner. That was great. Those are all good. But then he made basically a movie sandwich. On one side, you have the bread made out of awesome, cool, post-apocalyptic Mad Max movies. And in the middle, he had Babe, Pig in the City, Happy Feet, and Happy Feet 2. Ham and Penguin, I guess. Before he got back around to making the other piece of bread on this thing, which is another really cool-looking Mad Max movie. My opinion is, I can't freaking wait, and I've never been so excited for Mad Max again, and I love Tom Hardy anyway, so I'm in. I'm all in. So, Kyle, where are you at with this movie, dude?
Oh, I'm afraid I'm on that 150% that's going, I don't know, so many effects. Like, I watched The Night Gallery still, because I just love, you know, old stories, sci-fi stories, just told in their original forms. I'm watching the Star Wars trailer, too. Like, the camera shaking, and I'm like, oh, no, you can't do that. Well, I guess it's a modern audience, and so this to me was more of a, like, here's what I'm going to do with it. It's going to be okay, but realize that there will be a giant CG tornado at one point, and do not be upset.
Yeah, because it's going to be there, and I'm fine with the mix. He's shown himself to be an auteur with that technology. I mean, I say what you want about the Babe movies, the Pig movies. They're actually really good. They're actually like really good kids movies with great stories, with good arcs, and really cool technology to make those animals seem kind of weirdly human and all that stuff. And you could argue.
Spoken like someone who didn't have a little brother when those movies were popular.
I ever
have to see that movie again, I will dress up like one of the people from this trailer.
Yeah.
And go on a rampage.
I had a little kid over my little sister
in Parent Trap.
Yeah, that's true. Boy, that brings me back. But I had little kids when those movies are big, and they loved them, and I loved them, and they were cool. Happy Feet, I don't really have that much of an opinion on, except, you know, seems to be adept at directing a fully animated film. So why not take some of that experience and inject it here? Garrett, are you a Mad Max fan? Are you excited?
I'm ready to kick Kyle in the butt. This thing looks like an animated Iron Maiden album cover. How can you not be excited for it? It looks amazing.
Yeah, it does.
If you look in the wide shot where they show all the cars, and I believe it's Max comes up on one of those poles in the foreground, one of the cars is covered in speakers and PA equipment, and there's a dude rocking out on his red electric guitar.
Yeah.
You could show me a close-up on just that, yeah, and I would go see this movie based on that alone.
Yeah, psycho post-apocalyptic dudes are cool. The one that jumps off the hood of the semi with the two sticks with grenades on them and then blows up on the hood, yep, of the car behind them. They're willing to kill themselves. I mean, they're basically the model for the Borderlands games. Like, that stuff is awesome, and it's very uniquely Mad Max, and to bring all of that back and have it be that intense, I'm all in. And the only thing I can't really tell is how much does actual Mad Max have to do with much of this, because they're not giving him much to do in these trailers. He's just kind of making faces here and there.
He's irritated Max.
Yeah.
He's not actually
frustrated Max, yeah. He doesn't know what to do with himself.
But Mad Max, what's with the face strap?
Oh yeah, that the he looks like Bane again with that thing.
Yeah, they just couldn't get it off him.
Yeah, he just Pick wanted
back
to...
your desert, Australia.
Exactly.
Your weather here is more severe.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, all I know is whatever. As movies go, this coming year, there are really three movies I care about: Avengers 2, Star Wars, and this. And I'm as excited for this as I am anything. So bring it on.
Well, the lead guy, the walk away equivalent, looks fantastic, and he's going to be maniacal.
Oh,
I thought
guy,
it was,
yeah,
a remake though when I saw the tanker driving down the street.
Yeah, right.
Well, it is a reboot. That's important to note. This isn't a continuation. So at least that's what George Miller says. So if that's true, we very well could get story elements from heck all three of the first movies. I don't know what their plans are and if they want to franchise this out. I assume they do.
So this takes place on Vulcan. Right after the explosion.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, you got it. That's exactly right, Tom. You nailed it.
All right.
Those fossil fuel ships are really having a tough time.
Yeah. Red matter plays a role. Just walk away. All that. Yeah, it's going to be great. Tell us more, though, about this. Lucasfilm is up to things. Speaking of Star Wars, what's going on there?
Oh, sorry, Scott. I was just looking at my collection of original Star Wars Topps trading cards here.
I hate that you still have yours. Mine are long sold or gone or something.
Which reminds me, Captain Kipper submitted the Slash Film report that Lucasfilm and Entertainment Weekly have released images of Topps style trading cards that reveal the Star Wars The Force Awakens official character names. If you feel that the names of these characters represent a spoiler alert, I'll start by naming old Star Wars characters so you have time to turn your volume down,
yeah,
for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
So some of the characters in The Force Awakens are Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Princess Leia. Okay. The ball droid is BB-8. The Sith is Kylo Ren. Oscar Isaac is the X-Wing fighter pilot Poe Dameron. Daisy Ridley plays Rey, the girl on the speeder on Tatooine. And John Boyega plays the unmasked, maybe stormtrooper, named Finn.
Yep. Yep. Those are your names. The only names I'm having trouble with are, I don't think I like BB-8, and I don't think I like Poe Dameron. But I also understand
Poe Dameron is kind of, yeah,
it's a little out there. But Kylo Ren sounds very Star Wars. Rey with an E sounds like a Star Wars name. Finn, it sounds like it could be anybody. I'm fine with the rest of these, but Poe Dameron, I don't know. Not sure I'm into
that. I'm just glad I can stop referring to Finn as sweaty stormtrooper. That's what I've been calling
it. Aren't you a little sweaty to be a stormtrooper? Is the line?
Stormtrooper surprise.
Yeah. He. So you guys are okay. So Kyle and your like your generation, and Garrett are both a lot younger than me. Let's just put it out there. Are you fans of the prequels? And are we talking? Are we going to go to fisticuffs here because you guys like that crap? And it's only Tom and I that think they were bad.
I got to pass it to Garrett because I've got no arguments here.
I think they're bad movies that I really enjoy.
Yeah, that's my problem.
Okay,
I don't enjoy them.
Because there's what I think. I think dudes in their 20s straddle that. I think that they see it differently. But they were of an age where they realized, well, these aren't great. But man, I'm sure having a good time. There was us who were like, ugh, these are terrible and nothing like the originals. And then there were the originals where my parents were like, what is all this hubbub about? Who cares? It's just stupid robots and stuff.
You got to understand, too, like, we were in sixth grade. So, like, our perception of awesome, like, switched mid-prequels. And so, for me, Phantom Menace was like, oh, awesome. I owned all the T-shirts, big old graphics with the walkers and everything. I had toys. And then all of a sudden, like, seventh grade comes around. You started needing to be cool and get ladies. And all of a sudden, you go, whoa, wait a minute. What am I into?
I was going to say the exact same thing. I vividly remember having to sit through this my terrible piano recital so that I could do that, and then Mom would take me to go see episode one.
Wow.
And I lost my mind seeing episode one.
Sixth grade? I need to grapple with that for a minute.
Really that young? Were we really in sixth grade, Con?
Yeah.
99, you guys are in sixth grade. Tom and I were in 29-year-old grade.
Yeah, because second...
I was working at Half Price Books in Austin, taking the bus to the Highland Mall.
Yeah,
postgraduate school.
Yeah,
because gotcha. I know I was in high school when episode two came out, and I remember feeling like that didn't really do it for me. I was like, I don't know about this. Mm. But then I don't know. I'm one of the people who enjoys three. Like I like for the most part episode three.
I think I was in fifth grade when Empire came out.
Yeah, that was the same as me. I remember I was eight when the first movie came out. You guys were negative something.
I was
something.
Seven. Yeah,
six. I was about to say I was yet to be
sixth grade. Jeez Louise. Yeah, you're too young.
All right, just get the old men will get over it. You guys keep.
we'll survive.
So, like I said, yeah, I think they're severely faulted movies that I still enjoy watching. Although I genuinely enjoy three. I like Revenge of the Sith.
All right. Well, these are coming. They're going to be. I'm pretty stoked about this new one, and I'm hoping that bridges the gaps between all the different people who saw these movies at different times and have different feelings about prequels versus the originals and. You know, my kids versus somebody else's kids. And maybe finally we can all come together and agree that the new stuff is great, regardless of your age. And a whole new generation of kids can grow up spending too much money on action figures and Lego sets.
I can't wait to think that. Edgar Allan Poe Dameron.
Right. And like someday that name might mean the world to all of us.
Yeah.
And that's just bizarre to me. It's like sitting on the cusp of awareness of, oh, man, I hate that guy, or that was awful, or maybe it was the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Instead of Biggs Darklighter jokes, we'll be making Poe Dameron jokes.
Yeah, why not?
That's a really good point. Will Poe be the new Skywalker? Will it have that kind of effect when you hear that name?
Or will he be the new Porkins and die in a terrible way? And
Porkins.
Will his name be, maybe he'll say Nevermore a bunch of times and then crash. I don't know.
Possible.
Tom got my bad joke. Anyway. Continue on. Something about Google's happening.
Yeah, Findago let us know that the story of the head of Google News, Richard Gingras, announcing Thursday in a blog post that Google News shutting down in Spain on December 16th, and Spanish publishers will be removed from Google News worldwide.
What?
So even here in the U.S., if we go to Google News and look up stuff, we will not see anything from Spanish newspapers. The reason being an amendment to Spain's copyright law goes into effect January 1st that requires any news aggregator on the web to pay an unspecified license fee to any publisher for listing their content. And they can't opt out of it. Like publishers can't say, no, it's okay, do it for free. They have to charge according to the way the amendment is written. Google doesn't run ads on Google News, and they claim they can't afford to keep the site going under the new law, so they're just yanking it.
Well, they could afford, but they don't. Why would they want to? I'm with Google on this. This is kind of ridiculous. This is such a weird step backwards. You can't go back in time to 1994 and decide that this is how the web will work. That's not how it goes. We're too far in. The genie's out of that bottle. You can't. I mean, it's a law, and yes, Google has to comply, but I predict this won't last long. That seems crazy to me. What do you guys think? That's insane.
I, I'm literally scratching my head. And then you said 1994, and I immediately started thinking about how much I miss all the AOL discs giving me free time.
So many good coasters.
Exactly. And then the one time where, because I was too young, your friend and myself, we were just like, yeah, Frisbee, right? Yeah. And then you cut your forehead open.
Wow.
I hung those on Christmas trees.
I did that too. You're kidding. For real? You hung it on trees. Yeah. Oh, we did that same thing. We thought that was real funny and unique. And apparently,
a little bit. It was. Only two guys were doing it. Or as we know.
This really has to suck if you're any type of news outlet in Spain. Anywhere.
This is so dumb.
But the news outlets in Spain, the Newspaper Association, pushed for this law. Right?
Because they know how the world works.
Let me try to represent it from the newspaper side, so it makes it a little less loco. I'm a newspaper, and I want people to visit my site, but I'm under siege, right? Like I'm now competing with the entire world all the time, and here comes Google along, and they start taking my headlines and snippets, and they put them on the web, and they're not paying me for that. They're just taking my content and putting it over there, and people are reading it and sometimes not going to my website for it. That's my property. You can't just use that. So we need to come to an arrangement so Google can pay me for the use of my material. That is the perspective of the newspapers, because they're like, look, we're having a hard enough time as it is figuring out how to monetize our content. And you're making it harder for us. It doesn't help us to send traffic to either. It may be that in the future, our content is so valuable that we have to charge for it versus advertising. We're not making enough on advertising.
I could see this, but it's also just like saying, well, I really wish that water would run up the waterfall and not down. Can't we make it do that instead? Because you know, these are real problems. What you've described is not small and not, these sounds like a real issue for them, but I don't know that this is going to fix that. It's just going to ostracize them and create a weird bubble inside of Spain.
And is it really that big of a problem? Because am I losing my mind, or on Google News, when I click on the headline, does it not take me directly to the source article?
But they can't monetize that as well as they can monetizing directly charging Google.
But now they won't monetize it at all.
I'm about to say.
Yeah.
Right.
Like zip. Well,
and there's a few lies going on here on all sides, right? There are other ways to get to the news than just Google News. And in fact, Google has a dominant market share in Europe. So why it's blown out of proportion a little bit. It's 93% of the market share in Spain. But people can type in the names of newspapers' websites directly and go there. And maybe the newspapers are hoping that that will happen. It didn't happen in Germany. Germany had a similar law. It wasn't quite as strict. It allowed you to opt out. And that's what all the newspapers ended up doing, because they lost so much traffic when Google News went away. I think if they're smart, what the Spanish newspapers should do is create their own tech meme. Maybe even go talk to techmeme.com and license their technology. Mm. You have all the content. Stop trying to outlaw the competition, if you even think they're competition. If they've got too much market share, do what Hulu did against YouTube, create a competitor.
Mm.
You can do a better job of presenting your own content than Google News does. Let's be honest, Google News is okay, but it kind of sucks.
It's not great. Yeah, it's not great. It's kind of average. People are afraid to maybe compete with it because it's Google, but you could make, there are all sorts of news feeders that are better than that. So why not make one that's better than that and figure out a way to better? Yeah, I completely agree with that. So you're like the best debate coach in the history of high school. You just made a case for both sides in the same case that I totally, and I have sympathy for both sides. Way to go. Now I don't know who to vote for.
Well played, Tom.
Yeah, well played.
Agreed.
Okay, what else? Oh, Norton in the news. This is, what is it? Back to 94 again.
I got some fashion news for you. Do you have a fashion bumper for me?
I do. Hold on. Here you go. Right here.
Talk about that.
In fashion,
Nethken posted ready jeans protected by Norton. Yes, Norton as in the antivirus people, and yes, jeans as in denim trousers. The $168 jeans featured two RFID blocking pockets to defeat those nasty scanning devices that are trying to steal your chip and pin. They also have a gusseted crotch.
Gusseted crotch.
I, not have believed this had I not just clicked on the link and looked at this ad right here.
For it's like an onion piece or something. It's amazing.
Yeah,
Like in the future, this could be an essential piece of like daily wear and technology. But the fact that it's Norton just throws any ideas of advancement out of my head.
Yeah. This is kind of great.
Why did they do it? Like, it's not even antivirus. I mean, it could be antivirus. That'd be actually extra handy in lots of ways. Sure. But it's not. Yeah. It's just RFID blocking pockets.
Am I going to have to take off these pants before I can play online? That's what I want to.
Well, are you using any near field communication in your play? Because if not,
is that what the kids are calling it these days?
Yeah.
Hold on, guys. I have to disable my pants before I can play this game of Counter Strike. I'm sorry.
Keep finding notes in your pocket to update your pants.
Yeah. Is this Tom still a problem?
Like, every time you put on your pants, it notifies you that your pockets need updating.
Yeah.
You've only got 30 days left to wear these pants for free, and damn.
You're a codified crotch. What's it called? What do you call it? Gussified.
Gusseted.
No, gusseted crotch is going off. But are So if you is it a problem right now that people are getting hacked with RFID sniffers and stuff? Is that still? I know that was the big fear.
Is it a problem?
Yeah.
No, I mean it's not very widespread, but it is happening. There was a hack demonstrated that showed how you could just in an airport, I think it was Heathrow, just run a scanner and get all kinds of credit card numbers. It was a vulnerability in the way that the bank was processing the numbers, and so the bank has now fixed that. But this is something that hackers are trying and playing around with, and sooner or later some attacker is going to figure out how to do this. So there's that. There's also, if you're worried about spying, keeping your passport in a shielded case can be a good idea, so nobody can like figure out that you are where you're, you know, walking around, etc. So if you're a little extra paranoid, yeah, sure, having some RFID protected pockets. Why not?
Why not? I have a rule. I won't spend more than $50 for a pair of jeans. It's just kind
$168 of bucks. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Just go to ThinkGeek and buy one of the wallets that's RFID protected. Yeah.
Or make your own gussified or whatever crotch. What is it? Gusseted crotch.
Gusseted crotch.
Okay, just
for flexibility.
Yeah. I had to sit through a dinner conversation where my dad whips out his money clip and is like, this protects me from hackers. I'm like, does it, Dad?
Does it? Wow.
You just grab it and go, does it protect you from that?
I'm a hacker.
He's very excited about his RFID block money clips.
Well, so. Speaking of hackers, they figured out how to hack my wife's favorite appliance. Tom, tell me more about what happened here.
Yeah, CaddyCon tipped us off that hackers have figured out a way around the Keurig coffee machine's DRM on coffee pods. Keurig is trying to make it so that the 2.0 versions of their coffee makers only work with the pods officially sold by Keurig. It's the printer ink model of selling things. The hack involves snipping out a section of the lid from a valid Keurig K-cup and then taping that strip to the top of a non-Keurig pod. Or you could tape the strip to the Keurig machine itself right up there by the reader, and then it permanently fools it.
Wow, that's crazy.
How'd they not figure this out in R&D?
Well, you'd wonder, right? And this is just the 2.0 machine?
If you got the old machines, they didn't build any DRM into those.
Okay, because I have one that's, I think ours is right before whatever this model is, and so I guess it doesn't matter. But the
same thing here.
Uncopyrighted coffee. That is so weird.
This is just absurd. When I first saw this today, like at a glance, I'm like, does this have something to do with like 3D printing a Keurig? Like I couldn't figure out how DRM and coffee even became.
Basically, the way I understand it, they're just putting a little pattern that's hard to predict, you know, and replicate on the top of the cup.
The little module, yeah.
Yeah. What is it, like a scan code?
I think it's something like that. I don't know for sure, but obviously it's something that it doesn't matter if you repeat it. Because you can just keep using the same strip.
Can I convert my gusseted crotch into a Keurig 2.0 and then we can talk business?
I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay.
I want to come on next week and talk about the new Avast jiggings. That's what I can't wait for.
The Avast jiggings. Very nice.
I got those. I can wear them for free as long as I don't wear them to work, though.
Because your boss is really hard on you.
That's the hang up.
All right. Well, we have one last story, and it deals with something. What is it?
Star Fury Zeta submitted the story that BBC Worldwide has signed up with London Paramount Entertainment to add BBC shows to the previously announced on Current Geek Paramount Pictures Resort in Kent. So alongside attractions for Star Trek and Transformers, you will also possibly get Doctor Who, Top Gear, and Sherlock attractions.
Top Gear attraction I could see. Doctor Who I think I could totally see. I don't know about Sherlock, though. Isn't that just...
Solve the mystery.
Yeah, what do you do? Ride the carousel of progress in the mystery and just room to room follow him?
It's odd to me, that one. The others make sense. Top Gear, you're in a car, do one of those 3D experience things where it's just, oh my gosh, VR, you know, some sort of VR experience. Doctor Who's a great idea. I got the perfect thing. You just have a TARDIS. It looks like it's standing in the middle of space and there's no way that there's a bunch of room in there, but it's all optical illusion. Oh. And the person opens it and they go in and it's this giant place and you can see all this history and all this historical Doctor Who stuff. But Sherlock, I don't know, man. That's odd.
My minor spoiler alert on this one.
What?
Is that okay?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a plot point spoiler alert. It's just, it's not a resolution of a plot point, but you could have the Sherlock fall.
Oh.
That's exactly where you were going the second you said, oh, minor spoiler alert.
I don't think, if you don't know the show, I don't think that's a spoiler at all.
Well, some people think saying things is a spoiler, so I just wanted to be sure.
Those people.
You have to put on a dashing trench coat before you get on the fall. Is that?
Yeah, you get in a harness.
I haven't watched that much, so the only ride I can think of is you both exchange pills and whoever dies wins.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Oh, you went the morbid route.
That's a bad ride. I don't want that one.
It's awful.
It's really hard to repeat.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what they do with that. I think that's a really,
really
weird...
short for it.
Yeah. It's real one-on-one.
Yeah, I'd be cool if they did more things, do some things from the archive. Let me just walk through the set from Fawlty Towers
those
or something.
Three examples, Scott. Don't blame, maybe they will.
Yeah.
Maybe
but like Red Dwarf would be cool. Or I'm trying to think of other BBC things and I can't, but
I mean, if they got the BBC license, there's no way they're not doing a Doctor Who ride.
Oh yeah, well, Doctor Who's gonna happen. Yeah.
It is a Paramount park, which there's one of those already, King's Dominion in Virginia.
I've been there.
Yeah, I went to there when I was real young, and so for me it was like I didn't hit the wheels with the track in them, and I'm the best driver ever, Mom. That's about my experience. But so far, it doesn't seem like it's had the best run the past couple of years. Seems odd for them to be expanding.
Well, the way you do it, my understanding is the way you really keep a one around forever that isn't Disney or isn't Six Flags, and even some cases Six Flags. But what you do is you have like a local small amusement park. We have one here called Lagoon, and it's about, a mile north or an hour north of me. And they just buy old broken down German rides and then fix those up and then call it new and do a bunch of commercials that year to say, come and try the new loop-de-hoop-de-pooper or whatever.
Unsafe in Germany, now available.
Basically, so you would go, and I always got real inquisitive. I'd go around the back, and like there'd be a big scratched off metal label that used to have German words on it, and there'd be like some Sharpie thing with some strange, code for something.
What does verboten mean?
Open Faust.
Yeah, exactly. And they were always real scary to me from that. Not just because they were meant to be scary from the ride's perspective, but because they looked janky and jittery, and they were from some German place no one had ever seen. So they've thrived on that, though. They do really well. So.
Called East Germany.
Oh man!
The exciting thing about it being Paramount, though, I mean, do they get Indiana Jones with Disney having the ride?
Yeah. Well, they Paramount owns Indiana Jones, right?
They're the studio. Yeah.
But Disney has the Indiana Jones attractions in the Florida.
And they own it moving forward. So that's a good question.
It's UK, so maybe that helps them get around it.
It probably depends, I guess, on what's in the Disney's over there.
Well, maybe, is it the same question as if Fox had their own park? Would they have the rights over Star Wars and not Disney now? I don't know. That's a weird call.
Yeah, that'd be crazy. And real quick,
they haven't confirmed which properties will be there. They've talked about Star Trek, I think, for sure, but they haven't talked about anything else as far as I know.
Paramount
looks like Disneyland Paris has Indiana Jones and the Temple of Peril or Temple du Peril.
Oh my gosh. That's terrible. I'm not going to France ever again.
Really fun.
But quite perilous.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick jump into something fresh and new. Not that fresh, not that new. It's the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right, it's your chance to win or lose. You guys are going to get quizzed. It's trivia time. We ask you these questions. They're compiled and put together based on your interests. You don't know what they are yet. You don't even know what the topics are yet, but you'll find out shortly when you get an answer correctly. When you get it wrong, Tom will keep score the whole time, and depending on how you do, you may just beat your partner. Are you guys ready?
No.
Good. Then we will begin. Let's start with Kyle. Why not?
All right.
Kyle, yours is Heroes of the Storm trivia. You might be familiar with it. At least I hope
so. Looked at it a few times.
All right. Well, here are your eight questions, and we begin with, what talent for Gazlo causes scrap to reduce cooldowns?
Emergency bits?
You are incorrect. It is Break It Down. That is Gazlo's talent to cause scrap to reduce cooldowns. Next question. What is Jaina's first heroic ability?
Circle of Frost?
Get points?
No, you cannot. You can't say a word.
Water Elemental.
Nope. It is Ring of Frost. Ring of Frost. Did you know that one, Garrett? Just curious.
I did.
Okay. There
you go. The Jaina player.
Got it. Tom, how you doing? We're good so far on scoring? We're good?
No points so far. Sorry, right, Kyle.
Great. How much of a damage boost does Sonya get when using the Wrath of the Berserker ability?
30%.
You are correct. Nicely done.
30 points. Nice.
Yeah, 30 points, one for each percent.
Yep.
Bonus of damage to all basic attacks. Here you go. Next one. How much health do the Banshees have after, or sorry, have when Jim Raynor uses his Raynor's Raiders ability?
450.
You are incorrect. It is 700 health.
Ooh, and there was a debuff on that question, so he loses 20 points.
Well, you're still in the positive. You're at 10, so don't stress too bad. Next up, what is the name of the upcoming Egyptian-themed battleground?
Oasis of the Snake Lord.
I love your creativity, but it is Sky Temple.
Actually, I'm giving him a point because I want it to be Oasis.
I do too. That is awesome. All right. How many doubloons are needed to pay Blackheart to fire up enemy bases?
When in the game. 10.
You are... Hold on. Correct. 10 is correct. I lost my place, but yeah, you were right. Nice job.
Yes, someone needs to get on Iceworm for that because it changes every time you hand in.
Yeah, right? That's true. It's not even in the same match it changes, right? Or do I have that wrong?
Every time you hand in, it gets 2 coins more expensive.
Oh, that's crazy. All right, well,
this is a point for being smart.
You only gain them when it's your turn, I guess. Is that how it works? All right. Next up. What is the name? This is your second to last question. What is the name cost of Vala's Hungering Arrow ability? I like
the name cost.
Yeah, then I don't know why he put mana cost. He means mana. Oh. He wrote name. He meant mana.
What is the cost of my flowing locks?
60.
You are correct. Nicely done. Oh. Well done.
Ooh, you get 60 points for that, too.
Ooh, gosh, dang it. Gary, you're in for some trouble.
You
would have
lost
points.
60 if you got it wrong. So.
Final question. What is the name of Chen's first heroic ability?
Wandering Keg.
You are correct. Nicely done. I think you pulled it out real well there at the end.
Nice.
Yeah, way to go. All right, Tom, hang on to those points because now we're going to switch over to Garrett. Garrett, your questions... Because we felt like putting you in a place you haven't been in a while. We didn't want to go, you know, angry chicken again and get all up in Hearthstone's business.
It was StarCraft last time, wasn't it?
Well, it's StarCraft
exactly.
Again.
That's why we didn't want to go all angry chicken.
We're sticking back in the world of StarCraft. First question, what is Nova's middle name?
I don't know Nova's last name.
Nova canceled video game. No, none of those are correct. It is Annabella. Annabella.
He gets a point, though. He was correct. He did not
he did
know.
Not know. What is the build cost of a Protoss Zealot? Even I know this one.
100 minerals.
You are correct. Nicely done.
Ooh, 100 points.
Who? I think I put you ahead of Kyle now.
Can we just stop now?
Who Who provides the voice of Terran Ghost?
Terran Ghost?
Yeah, I could give you a hint, but it'd be cheating.
I know who he is. I do not know his name. It's the same dude that voices Illidan.
You are correct, but you are incorrect in not knowing the name. It is Liam O'Brien. He is the master. He is the man.
You get a 30% not remembering Liam's name penalty.
Yeah. even though he was at our live show at oh no, you weren't even at our live show. Where were you at BlizzCon during our live thing?
BlizzCon, I was watching your live show.
Oh, I thought you were at some finals or something.
Scott loses a point.
2 years ago.
Were there because I gave you a shout out in the middle of it. I'm an idiot. Yeah. Never mind.
And I was teasing you for stealing all of the Angry Chicken's content.
That's right. That's right. Now I got it. Number next. How much Vespene gas is required to build a Terran battlecruiser?
Dear God, Iceworm, you're evil. 400?
Oh, you're so close. 300 is the correct answer. Although that could have been 400 at some point. Because as you know, these things change. They get bad.
You lose 2 points for being 100 off.
All right, there you go. Next up.
A lot of math involved there.
What Baneling evolution increases blast radius by 50%?
Oh! Seriously, going to murder Iceworm for this.
Basically win or lose 50% of your points based on the
central fugal hooks.
So close. Rupture is the correct answer.
Half your points gone.
Is that even in multiplayer?
Yeah. No, that's a campaign.
That's a campaign
deal. Oh, go to hell, Iceworm.
Yeah, you know, who plays a campaign? Next up, how many gigabytes is the USB flash drive included with the Wings of Liberty collection or collector's edition, which included the original StarCraft and Brood War on that drive?
Hold on, I'll go plug it in.
I have this thing. If I can run to my bookshelf, yeah. 4 gigabytes.
You are. I wish it was 2 gig. It was woefully small. I thought even for 2010.
4 is woefully small. That's all I could think of.
Yeah, that was 2010, and even then I was like, "What? 2 gig? You guys are nuts!" All right. Next up, what is the build time for a Terran Firebat in StarCraft 2?
25 seconds.
You are so close. 30 seconds. 30. Oh. All right, final question. What StarCraft II pet do you receive with the Wings of Liberty Collector's Edition?
Mini Thor.
You are correct. Nicely done. Finish that out strong. Tom Merritt, how did they do?
Well, Garrett finishes with a very solid 35 points, and Kyle outpaces him with 73.
Oh, Kyle, nicely done. You've rocked the vote or whatever.
You elected Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Well, that was the rock the vote thing. All right. Well, here's this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Well, looky here, everybody. Oh, by the way, this is brought to you by the new tech history calendar that is up on the Frog Pants store right now. If you can go want to check that out, it's at frogpants.com/store. And it is 12 months of tech history written by Tom, illustrated by me. Brand new months colored up this year. So if you have last year's, there's a whole new one this year. It's not just a rehash.
Yeah, all the days are in different places too.
Yeah, exactly. And it has new art for each month. So please check that out at frogpants.com/store. This is a segment called Forecast. It used to be a show called Forecast, and it's where we predict the future. Tom, I think this is yours, right? Tell us about it. What is this?
I see your note here about Water Wars. Water Wars was always a big recurring theme on the show Forecast.
Yep.
This is a reason why there won't be water wars. Water shipping will become a major industry.
So just moving it about? Or
yeah, so here's the thing. I've been reading about how the jet stream has been kind of going wonky. And that's why we get the weird like Snowmageddon and the droughts in the Southwest, because the jet stream is pushing all of the moisture up north where it gets cold and frozen and then comes down and snows in Atlanta. So you got no moisture because it's all getting blown away from the Southwest. I'm way oversimplifying this to the meteorologists in the audience that are cringing. But essentially, you know, all the water goes away from the Southwest of the North America and gets dumped farther south. So with this imbalance of water, it'll start to become profitable to ship water more often in large amounts, fresh water, from a place that has too much of it.
So, like, say, South Central America could have excessive amounts of water that they collect either via rainwater or whatever.
Or even, like, New York and during, like, Hurricane Sandy.
Okay. So, it's not, I mean, in a way, it's kind of, we do, like, when states are proximate to one another and we can send water to, say, Arizona, we've done that through pipes and stuff like that. But your point is, like, well, if South...
Water will get so problematic in certain areas, and it will be so costly that it will actually be worth it to ship.
Got it. But you think that averts a war? Is is where you're getting at with this.
Yeah, it's profiteering.
Mm. Profiteering often does win.
There might be some minor, you know, there's war. There'll be no war for water cries out there.
Right. It'll be on signs.
Because of the water wells that are being drilled.
Mm-hmm. Thomas, is this wishful thinking because of all the flooding in your area?
No, it was actually not wishful thinking. I was watching all of the rain today. I don't have any flooding in my area. There's been flooding up in San Francisco. There were a flash flood warning here. I don't think anything happened. But I was like, wow, if we could just save this water, right? I mean, that's the whole idea of reservoirs and everything. But I started thinking like, well, wait a minute. When they get a ton of water, you know, pouring down in a part of the country that doesn't need it, why don't we ship it? Well, the reason we don't ship it is because water's really freaking heavy.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult to move. But I'm like, you know, at a certain point, though, it'll become worth it.
Yeah. And by trucks and by big freight planes and things like that.
Or maybe a pipeline. Maybe it's an oil, you know, like a tanker thing for ships.
Futurama tubes.
Yeah, why not?
For water.
They have one of those. I grew up in New Mexico, so it was always very scandalous to end up in Phoenix where there was palm trees. Mm. And there's a pipe that runs from the Grand Canyon through Arizona down to New Mexico. So we basically got the runoff of the palm trees, whereas Phoenix was full of golf courses and all this.
Yeah, which, well, and that place shouldn't even be livable. I mean, people shouldn't even live in freaking Phoenix. Like, I look, my
nobody should live in Los Angeles either, or Salt Lake.
That's true for that matter. Yeah. But I mean, at least Salt Lake's got, like, we have mountain runoff, right? It's coming right.
A salty lake.
Well, yes. But the mountains that are just right there in the valley, they are pumping snow water down every spring.
That's the part you just said, the valley. Like, you go in a valley and go, this will be good for protection from the, we can build a tower on the mountain. Mm-hmm. Whereas Phoenix, it's just like a giant flat place. Someone said, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Phoenix and Vegas.
Yeah. Vegas feels very egregious.
Oh, Vegas. There's absolutely no reason for Vegas to exist other than people decided to build casinos there.
Yeah. And now it's a thing that's a, you know, it's a landmark. It's a thing that you can't get rid of, but it really has no right to naturally exist.
And I say LA because one of the big parts of the history of Los Angeles is they went and they found water up in the mountains and then piped it all the way down to LA and then started annexing all the cities around them. They're like, you want water? Got to join us.
Wow. Those jerks.
Jeez.
Well, this
or
is
Seattle, where there's too much water and the city got buried three times in mud.
Yeah.
So if they could ship that water,
there we go. Okay.
So to me, so what you're basically describing is the oil situation we're in now, just with water. It's the same kind of thing. Scarcity will increase need will increase cost. Cost will increase the need for transportation of said water, and prices will go up and down. The stock market will live and die by the cost of water. Like, that's all we're really talking about here. It's just shifting from exactly. Oil to water.
With the way scientists are talking right now, it may be cheaper to just ship it from space after we capture a comet made of nothing but ice and circle around the moon a few times to get a good glance at it before we start mining it out.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's even better.
Or better yet, I don't know. I am no scientist, okay? I don't know anything. But I do know this. If we can just harness a way to capture ocean water and get all the stuff out of it that needs to come out of it for it to be drinkable.
Well, that's probably a more realistic objection to my shipping of water is that one of the reasons that we don't do that is the desalination is too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It's too difficult, but it's possible.
Sure.
And so at a certain point, it's probably more affordable to do desalination than it would be to ship water here and there.
And it's when we run out of that things are really screwed. I mean, that's, and I don't mean like empty oceans. I mean, jacking up the ecosystem to the point that we've taken the salt out of too much natural.
And here's the other realistic possibility that people are pushing for right now, which is reprocessed water.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
One of the problems with water use is that when you flush your toilet, that water doesn't go back into the system.
Right.
And people are saying, you know, it could. We can treat that water so that it's perfectly safe to drink, but nobody likes that idea. It just seems gross.
Right.
And so it's really hard to get that passed in municipalities. That would have a huge effect on water conservation.
Well, maybe. I mean, if what's his name? If Waterworld taught us anything, it was that
I was wondering what Scott was going to
if you could, if you can pee on a tree, you pee on a tree and then you can still drink it. That's great. That's what we should be doing. I actually think that's how this all gets solved. I cut somebody off. Who was that trying to speak?
Oh, well, maybe, I mean, we need to, you know, with all the trailers coming out right now, clearly directors are like, here, put this in your mind so you're got your expectations in line for when the movie finally comes out. So maybe we just need signs next to all the water fountains that say, we didn't split the pipes here. This toilet water is the same as the fountain water. And maybe we can start, you know, working towards that golden opportunity of reprocessing.
Golden correctly. Opportunity. I see what you did there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
not
played.
Intentional, but disgusting.
It's worse than that, though. I mean, I don't need some Italian guy who went on a freaking Italian food bender one night and then went home and made the worst crap of his life. I don't need that water to be I don't want that water to be part of this.
You're drinking that water.
I know, but it's still...
It's not like the water on Earth just appeared yesterday, pristine. It's all been used.
That's true. It's true. Yeah, it's true.
You're lovely. Your beautiful, you know, mountain snow water, Scott. I mean, you know, bears are peeing in it. You know, fish are doing all kinds of unspeakable things in it. And you're drinking it. I don't think you're going straight to the river, but you're treating it. Right. So. I don't know. I trust science. Yeah. I trust it enough where if they said, hey, we took this nasty poo water. We did some sciencey things to it. It is now safe for drinking.
If they came out and said, we're scientists and we took nasty poo water and did sciencey things to it. If that's the quote, we're all screwed.
Well, this is coming from the man who lives up in Florida where the popular pastime is going to the beach. And that's just like, whoa, like, there are animals galore in there. Well, yeah, but you guys are like... spitting it through your teeth and like diving in it and big smiles
on your
face. You
can't drink beach water though.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Still nasty.
It's, yeah.
And I tried. It makes you throw up.
I'm with.
Up in a desert.
Great. Well, I think that's, I think we've saved the future really by this episode of Forecast. And now feedback. We got an email from somebody. By the way, if you want to send your feedback in, there's two ways to do it. You can email us at currentgeek@gmail.com. And if you want to, you can leave a phone message and we'll play it on the show. 801-471-0462. That's 801-471-0462. Happy to do it. Here is an email from James who says, you guys mentioned author and physicist Jim Kakaleos. Am I saying that right? I hope so. On a recent episode, just wanted to let you know that this isn't the first mashup of physics and comics. He wrote an excellent book, The Physics of Superheroes, that goes into fun details about how superpowers would work and what other effects they would have. Also provided some commentary on physics and the extra features on the Watchmen DVD. He's also a fun follow on Twitter or Google+. Thanks for the great shows, guys. James. That sounds awesome. I remember we talked about the comic, but I didn't know there was this book, The Physics of Superheroes. I will totally be checking that out.
That's awesome. Thanks,
yeah,
James.
Really cool. Off, yeah, man. We love that kind of stuff. And again,
DVD back in and turn on the commentary.
Right? I know. I assume it's a... Well, I wonder if it's just like an extra feature and not just the commentary of the movie. I don't know. It's been so long since I've seen that. But anyway, definitely worth checking out. Again, the name of that is The Physics of Superheroes. And his last name is Kakaleos. It's Kakaleos if you want to search for it in various places where you buy your books and stuff. That's going to do it for us, you guys. That's a show.
Well done.
Huge thanks to our guests. Kyle, tell us more about where you can be found on the internet.
Oh, I can be found at Kyle Ferguson on Twitter. Of course, check out A-Move TV for all the podcasts I do, including Into the Nexus, A-Move Radio. And then my website, kyleferguson.com, where I post my ramblings and expoundings about Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, very nice. I like that. I like the sound of that. I like the cut of your jib.
Thank you.
Also, Garrett, how about you, man? Where should people go?
Well, same as Kyle. They can check out amove.tv, which is where all of the shows that I do can be found. But I can be followed on Twitter at Garrett Art. And you can actually check out my graphic design portfolio over at nomoonart.com.
He's really good. How big of an advantage is it to graphic designer types like us to also be podcasters? Because no one ever has to do our album art for us. We can just freaking do it.
It's amazing. Also, I think just about every client I have has come out of listening to something I did somewhere.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Very, very great. They are symbiotic professions, I have to say. After doing this for so long, you start to realize, wow, I'm sure glad I can draw. And I'm sure glad I can podcast because they both seem to go together real well. Well, that's awesome. Do check those things out. Tom McMerritt, anything you have before we go?
I can't draw.
Yeah, but you can podcast so good.
You're the exception. It almost makes up for it. I want to second the A-Move TV thing. I'm sure most of the Frog Pants audience is familiar, but if you haven't checked it out, go amove.tv. There's really cool stuff there. In fact, a perfect
sequel to your Evening Current Geek, if you're watching live, is to go watch The Gamers Inn with Ryan Murphy and Jocelyn Moffat. Yeah. It's really fun.
Yeah, I enjoy that show. I've been on there. It's great, great stuff. The extended friends of Frog Pants know no bounds. They're all wonderful human beings with great talent and incredible stuff. You guys have been rad. Thank you both for being on the show again. And of course, we can be found at currentgeek.com. You can also find us on the internet on Twitter at Current Geek. You can find us at currentgeek.reddit.com. Currentgeek at gmail.com is our email address. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for all you listeners who just have nothing better to do on a Friday night. We'll see you next time. Our theme by Andrew Allen.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.